You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you hear that tune, you know you've wandered into the steam room, and we're glad you did. Welcome, loyal steamers. The show is presented by Tissot, the official watch of the NBA, and it features the inimitable Charles Barkley.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Ernie Johnson. Although, maybe you are imitatable because we heard the sports talk show host Danny Ruiz from Washington, D.C., do a very spot-on impression of you over the last couple of days.
This the first half analysis. That half of basketball was played. That's not the whole game. That's half the game. Damon Lillard, he did a step back, but he stepped forward, and then he moved back. He went back about 25 feet. That's probably that travel, but they're not going to call it. Michael Jr. Porter, he made a bunch of shots. Nikola Jokic, Joe Kitchen. He's tall, and Nikola Jokic or Jimmy Joe Jokic, didn't foul nobody. That was something. That's a good half of basketball between Portland and Cleveland. Back to you, Ernie.
That was hilarious. I got to tell you a funny story. I got a call from a celebrity. I'm not going to mention their name, like probably 10 years ago, and they wanted me to join a lawsuit because they wanted to stop this comedian from imitating them. He says, it's disgusting that he imitates us. We should file a lawsuit. And I'm like, yo, man, I think it's flattering and funny. And I, first of all, he does you really, really good. I don't want to embarrass the celebrity. But I said, yo, man, I think so many people take themselves way too seriously. I mean, that was like one of the funnier things we've done on the show. And I'm glad we gave little Mr. Rudier some love because he's a very talented man. But that always made me laugh when people can't joke at themselves.
Yeah, no doubt. So if you're a first-time listener, first question is, where the heck have you been? But if you're a loyal steamer, you know how we start every one of these episodes, and that's with Charles' favorite phrase, which would be, first of all.
Yeah, I got a lot today, Ernie. I got a lot today. Yeah, I do.
Well, start unpacking it, man.
Okay, so I'm going to start out with Naomi Osaka. You know, I just want to wish her the best. She's won 4 Grand Slams. She's like 22, 23 years old. And people think she's the happiest person in the world. And she's not. And we want this podcast to be so good. We want to make it funny most of the time. But sometimes we have to talk about serious stuff. So, man, anybody out there, please ask for help. It doesn't make you weak. It doesn't make you a bad person. Just please go talk to somebody because, hey, we all go to stuff. So I just want to give a shout out to Naomi Osaka and say, hey, girl, we are all pulling for you and we're proud of you for going and get some help.
In her case, too, I mean, that's, you know, this all came to light because she had told those event organizers that she wasn't, you know, she didn't want to do media. And, look, this is if you've got something, you know, where that doesn't sit well with you and it really is that you really have an issue with this and not one of these things where, oh, look, I don't want to talk to the media. This is like that puts her in a real bad spot, you know.
Yes.
They're athletes, but it doesn't mean that public speaking is something they enjoy. It doesn't mean that it's, oh, yeah, I'm out there and. You know, there are certain people for whom that is a real issue. And you know, it's like, yeah, there's got to be some understanding there. And it's, you know, it's not like one of these things where, oh, I just don't feel like talking today, you know, because you see that every now and different sports where somebody, you know, you're supposed to be there for a media availability and just blows it off because they don't feel like doing it.
Yeah.
This is something where when she's asked to do that, puts her in a really, really bad place mentally. And so, I hope she's able to see her way through this. I know she withdrew from another tournament prior to Wimbledon coming up. And we just beg for some understanding that, look, you may have a lot of money and you may have a lot of fame, but it doesn't mean that you, as you put it, that you don't have problems.
Yeah. Hey, and I want to, I want to give a shout out to Coach K. We become casual friends over the last few years. I do his podcast at least a couple times a year. He's always been great to me. And I just want to say, Coach K, thanks for an amazing career. Thanks for being a terrific person. You have represented Duke with class and dignity. And it's just, it's been fun watching you from a distance. Like, I got to know you on the first Dream Team. And I was terrified to walk up to you. And you walked up to me and said hello. Because we're in the gym together one day. I was like, man, there's Coach K. There's Coach K. And like I said, you never know how celebrities, if they want to be bothered or not. But he came over and we've been, I'd say, casual good friends. And I just wanted to say, hey, Coach, thanks for an unbelievable ride.
His legacy will be what, Chuck? Will it be, you know, a guy who had great success and did it the right way? What would it be?
Well, you talk about sports. There's a Mount Rushmore in every sport. He's on the Mount Rushmore of college basketball coaches. You know, and I can't compare him to John Wooden because I don't know anything about John Wooden other than all the things he accomplished. But I think during my lifetime, he is the greatest college basketball coach ever. And one thing I admire about him is I think he's won 4 Olympic gold medals. As head coach of the Olympic team, the ability to deal with the pain in the ass NBA players year after year after year, that tells me he's able to adapt.
You know, Chuck, that's a great point because I've thought about that too. I said, you know, you go from when you show an ability to handle kids,
yes,
you know, who don't know anything, you know. And I don't mean that as an insult. I'm just saying, you know, really, in the big picture, when you're 18, 19, you don't know anything. And he handles them. And then he goes up and then he handles guys who know everything.
Yeah.
You know, he's been able to navigate that seamlessly.
Yeah. And that's one thing that I admire about him. So, Coach K, thank you. Hey, I want to mention this kid named Stan. I got him in my phone on the Stan bike because Stan sold me my bike. And he worked in Philadelphia. I spent a lot of time with him during the summer. We would go out drinking beers a couple of days a week. And anytime I had any issue with my bike, I'd call Stan. He said, hey, bring it down to the shop. Bring it down to the shop. And people knew we were really good friends. I had people calling me who I didn't even know saying, hey, man, I got really bad news. And I'm like, what's going on? So Stan got hit on his bike the other day, Ernie, on his head-on collision, and got killed over the weekend.
Oh, man.
Man, Ernie, this dude was just the nicest kid. He probably was 40 years old. I shouldn't be calling him a kid. But, man, he was the biggest 76er fan in the world. This dude would text me, what do you think? What do you think? I said, Stan, I don't know, man. I got to worry about Fred Simmons' free throw shooting. I got to worry about Joel's health. And like Stan, I don't even know a lot about his family, but I just, man, when you meet really nice people in life who had an effect upon you, you should always make sure you tell them what they mean to you. And I'm never going to get to tell Stan again what a great friend he was, but I want people in Philadelphia and the people who watch the Steam Room, man, Stan, you're going to be missed.
That's a crusher right there. Chuck.
Oh, dude, it broke my heart. Stan, you're going to be missed, brother. I love you.
Should we pause here on the Steam Room, take a break, and then come back?
Yeah, let's get to some guests.
We will take a break here on the Steam Room. When we come back, special guest nearing the end of a legendary career.
Legendary career.
Reggie Miller in an animated discussion with Spike Lee.
I don't think that Spike realizes he's not in the game.
Here comes McGrady. No timeout committed. McGrady for the win.
Yes!
The steal by James. 2-on-1. Here's McGinnis with a high dribble.
Oh! James!
The Kevin Durant has won at the buzzer.
If you need to be told who that was, then you're probably tuned to the wrong podcast. The unmistakable voice of Marv Albert, who joins us in the steam room. And this guest segment is presented by Microsoft Teams. Where there's a team, there's a way. Marv Albert, his career drawing to a close at the end of these playoffs. Man, it's just wonderful, Marv, to have you with us today. We've heard so many of those calls and are happy and honored to call you a teammate. How is it going here on this last go-around, man?
First of all, great to be with you and Charles in the steam room. I have enjoyed getting at least into the arena because we had been doing it virtually for many, many weeks. Being able to see live players, live fans, seeing the game in person has been quite a kick. I don't know how I'll feel when I know my last games will be the Eastern Conference Finals. I think it'll be kind of a surreal feeling that I know that unless I go back to my days as a kid doing games off the TV set and putting the sound down with a crowd record and doing it myself, maybe I'll bring my brothers out and Steve in also because they did it with me, as did my son Kenny. He started to do that. But you got to let go. I thought 55 years of doing NBA broadcasting, which many games involve Charles, I should say, it's the right time. But it gives me and my wife, Heather, and our two pugs a chance to spend more time together. So I look forward to that aspect of it.
No doubt.
You know, Marv, I was telling this story the other night. You know, when you're growing up and you start watching NBA basketball, and for years, I never had the opportunity to meet you. When I met you, I called all my friends. I said, Marv Albert knows who I am. It was one of the coolest things in my life, the first time I got an opportunity to meet you, because I watched you from a distance for so long. When you said hello to me, I told all my friends. It was the same way when I met Jack Nicholson. I was checking into a game, and Jack Nicholson, Charles, welcome, young fella. Welcome to the NBA. The same thing with Denzel Washington. So, man, you're a living legend.
That's very kind, Charles. I don't know if I put myself with Denzel and Jack, but that's awfully nice of you.
You know, when we play some of your stuff, you've been at some of the most iconic events, not just in basketball, in sports history. You know, when you call the Knicks championship, number one, I know you couldn't think like, wow, they've never going to win another one in my lifetime. I mean, that's
got to be like... It was two of them.
And you like, now we got X amount of years later, they still haven't won a championship. What was the best feeling and the worst feeling you've ever felt at a sporting event?
The best feeling to me, and you would share that feeling, I would think, was doing the Olympic Games in 1992 with the Dream Team, which you were a part of. But I got a chill when, if you pardon the expression, Mike Fratello, the czar, and I did the games where you had to qualify. And I believe it was Portland. And when you guys first walked out, it was the greatest group of athletes I thought ever assembled in a team sport. Just seeing the group, Larry Bird, you, Michael, Carl Malone, John Stockton, right down the line, Patrick Ewing. Just seeing that team walk out on the court was, to me, one of the all-time memories I will have. What that meant for international basketball, you see all the international players now, who are outstanding. And then seeing you walk the streets of Barcelona, followed by thousands of people, I got such a kick out of that. I mean, just the whole moment was wonderful. So that would be number one. Let's see, the worst I've ever felt about a sporting event.
Let me guess, Fratello was involved.
Most annoying, let's say that, since you bring Mike up, who was great to work with and was so prepared and was, on the other hand, someone who should not be walking the streets by himself at any time. But it was the game where Michael Jordan went on that three-point barrage against Portland in the NBA Finals, came out early to shoot threes, and then he hit, I believe, six threes in the first half. And he looked over at our broadcast table. We were doing the game for NBC, and it was myself, the Czar, and Magic Johnson. And he shrugged his shoulders, which you've seen that highlight so many times.
There's Jordan for three! Yes! Michael indicating he can't believe it!
And he was looking at Magic. You know, he was saying, I don't believe I'm doing this. And the Czar said, no, he's looking at me, you know. Wanted to take credit for this little movement that Mike made. That's probably the saddest moment in a broadcast I ever had, because he still to this day feels that he was getting the recognition of Michael actually knew who he was and cared about him.
Mark, who was the most important person in your broadcasting career who, whether you wanted to be like them or they gave you your first like big time job? Who's the most, give me a list of the people who have made you one of the best to ever do it.
Well, there were two announcers. I wanted to be a sportscaster from the third grade on. I remember writing a composition, one of those, what do you want to do when you grow up? So I was actually, you know, practicing off TVs. I would listen on shortwave radio because I did NHL for many years to some of the great announcers in Canada, like Danny Gallivan and Foster Hewitt. And I'd pick it up on a shortwave radio, if you remember those. You don't?
Oh, yeah.
I pick up broadcasts, baseball broadcasts like that. But there was one or two people, one in particular, his name is Marty Glickman, who actually was an Olympic runner. He was on the team in 36 with Jesse Owens in Berlin. He guided me to go to Syracuse University, where they have the Newhouse School of Broadcasting, and took an interest in my career. He listened to my tapes. He hired me out of college, and I was his writer and back announcer, and he gave me a break. Also, he was doing Knicks radio. He was doing the Giants radio. So he was like one of the biggest names in New York sports. He also did some network NBA. He would see things, and I'd have him listen to my tapes, and he would point out things that I would never have thought of at the time. For example, on radio, he felt I would always say a particular player was driving straight down the lane. I got into this habit, but he said sometimes they go across the lane. Only he would see that. And there was another announcer by the name of Les Kiter, who worked in Philadelphia. I don't know if he was there when you were there, but he worked there, and then he worked in Hawaii, but he was in New York at the time that the Giants and the Dodgers moved away from Brooklyn and from the Polo Grounds, and he did recreations with a crowd record, and I got to know him. In fact, he gave me a crowd record that I was able to use at home when I did my attempts at recreation. So I would say Marty and Les. Les also did many championship boxing fights. He also did the Knicks on radio for a while. So those were my influences, people who took extra interest, let's say, in how I was doing and, you know, would review my tapes.
Yeah. Did you feel like you're in those early days and as your career progressed, did your style change at all? Or what would you tweak and what, you know, how much listening back to games and that kind of thing and getting feedback made you the announcer that you became? Were there things that you changed?
I think a couple of things. I know the criticism was being from New York and having a bit of a New York accent, and I was very aware of that. I tried to change it up still there a little bit, nothing wrong with it. But I did pull away from it a little bit when I started at NBC on the network doing, you know, NFL and NBA, et cetera. I would say otherwise, maybe more of a sense of humor. And that came because I ended up doing the 6-11 sports at NBC in New York. And we did a show called Live at 5. And that was a little bit more of a frivolous show. And I would do the sports interviews. And I always, you know, believed in humor being involved. So it came out then. And, you know, David Letterman was across the hall doing his show. And David started to ask me to come on with him. And we were showing the wild and the wacky bloopers.
Oh, yeah.
He would call me the emergency guest if somebody could make the show at the last moment, or if they had a bit that they needed. And there was a battle between Regis Philbin and myself as to how many appearances we each made. But that I think that kind of added to it, and it was very it was good for me to, you know, open up like that, and I was able to, you know, incorporate that.
Do you have any idea how many sporting events you've been to?
No, you know, I never counted, because when I was doing the Knicks and the Rangers, I would miss a lot of games for NBC events, and I would never be one who would have like a consecutive game streak, because yeah. It's kind of like my son Kenny, who does mostly Rangers, National Hockey League, but he misses a lot of games by doing them on NBC and will eventually be doing them on TNT. And I should warn you, he's very annoying. And and I'm only a phone call away if you want him to, you know, straighten him out.
We'll try to steer clear of that. Yeah.
So, Mark, we got a small sample of the fans in the first round of the playoffs this year, how crazy it was in New York with the Hawks and the Knicks. Can you give our Steam Room fans, what's it like to be in New York City when the crowd is just going crazy?
I find New York is right on top. I mean, the loudest crowd I ever heard was, I go back to 1970, in my early years, when the Knicks did win that first championship, and Willis Reed was not supposed to play. At the last moment, the warm-ups had just finished up. The players were still on the court, and Willis limps out from right below our broadcast booth.
Here comes Willis, and the crowd is going wild.
And the Lakers just stopped. I remember Wilt Chamberlain, Jerry West, they stared in disbelief to see that Willis was going to play. And actually, that the crowd went crazy. I've never heard that kind of sound. I mean, there've been a lot of loud crowds around the NBA, but I never heard that volume, that decibel level.
It's, you know, one of the things too, Marv, is, you know, when you talk about memories of the Garden, you know, that's one of those places that kind of transcends the sport, and, you know, all sports have them. You know, you can go to a baseball game, but going to one at Wrigley Field or Fenway is different. You know, you can go to a golf tournament, but if you go to Augusta National, that's different. You can go to a tennis match, but when you go to Wimbledon, that's different. And it was, I have such great memories of being there with you in the time on TNT when we actually had Wimbledon. And Jim Huber there as well, you know, and just Jim Courier was there. But that was a special time too. That was one of those things, Marv, I think when you were like, look, I'm known for this and I'm known for this, but here's an opportunity to do this. What are your fondest memories of being able to be at the All England Club?
Well, the people you mentioned, Jim Courier was so helpful. I had not done any tennis. I played a lot of tennis, but it's a different sport because you don't really talk very much. I think I just had to pull back because, you know, I'm so used to, particularly when you do radio, doing so much talking, explaining, you know, every play that happens, documenting it. But in tennis, you really, that was the toughest thing for me, is pulling back. You can't really talk much. You see it. But as you say, it was a wonderful experience. What I remember most is being driven over and listening to the British announcers who were superb and calling tennis matches on radio. It was unbelievable. That was my main memory, which also brings me back to my younger days. We played a lot of ping pong. I still do. And my brothers and I, we'd set up in our basement. Two of us would play, and the other would be broadcasting the ping pong match, which was a great test and skill of talking as fast as possible.
Albert with a forehand. Albert with a backhand. Now Albert with a forehand. Oh, drop shot, Albert.
And my mother would be screaming downstairs, "What are you guys yelling about?"
Yeah, sure.
And then my brother Al, who had a little bit of a temper, would throw his racket against the wall. So we had some explosives there also.
Hey, Chuck, you know what I remember most of all from our time at Wimbledon together with Marv and Jim Huber and the guys? There was always a breakfast in the hotel restaurant. And when you're over there, there's always, it's kind of like things you don't normally see. But I made it a habit of having the
queen, yeah, and the, yeah, king.
I made it a habit of having the waitress bring a huge bowl of stewed prunes over to Marv's table every time I saw him sitting by himself. And he'd get this quizzical look on his face. What is, you know, and then she pointed at me over in the corner. I just give Marv a wave. Yeah.
They were delicious, Ernie. Yeah.
There's some more coming your way.
Yeah. Well, I got two questions for you. Number one, what is your favorite sport? And secondly, give me the, because I'm not going to say one because I don't think that's fair. Give me a list of five of the greatest you've ever seen play, broadcast in person.
Favorite sport is the NBA. I've always, from the days I would play, three on three in the schoolyard in Brooklyn, couldn't go left. Still can't go left, Charles. It's very sad.
Neither can Magic Johnson, so don't worry about it.
Yeah. But I would say doing NBA basketballs, clearly. And the five greatest athletes that I've ever, say, broadcast?
Yes. Yes.
Well, it would be Michael and Magic. There's so many more. Wayne Gretzky, when I was doing hockey. Tom Brady, when I did NFL. Larry Bird, I might put in there too. Kareem, I'm cheating. I'm going further than five.
You talk about an impossible question to answer,
yeah,
given the number of high profile marquee athletes you've covered. Good gracious. Yeah, that would be impossible. Hey, where'd yes come from?
Gets it to LeBron for three for the win. Yes! LeBron James at the buzzer!
Okay, how'd that start as we begin to wind down here?
We'd be playing ball in the schoolyard, and there's always someone actually doing the play-by-play of the game as we're playing. It wasn't me. I was actually pretty shy. And a friend of mine would mimic a referee at the time in the NBA by the name of Sid Borgia. Sid had all kinds of gyrations, and when someone would go to the basket and score and get fouled, he would go, "Yes, and it counts." And I just happened to throw in the yes. I remember it was a Nick playoff game against Philadelphia, and Dick Barnett hit one of his fallback baby jumpers from an impossible angle, and I happened to say yes, And then I incorporated it every once in a while, and people started to repeat it to me if they saw me at the Garden. And players would say, during warm-ups, they look over and say, yes. So I would use it for, a shot that's drilled, a three-pointer. And you don't want to overuse it. So it just became part of the nomenclature.
Has a player ever got mad at you?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Oh, yeah. Coaches, too. When I did the Knicks, even though I was doing local, I always believed in being objective. And sometimes that was not appreciated, particularly in the Knick down years. So, yeah, that happens. I mean, it's okay. I understand. But sometimes you have to ask certain questions. Not that you're always right in asking those questions. But I would say it happened more in basketball, where I know coaches and general managers were a little upset, who are now my friends, incidentally. I'm very close with several of these people who used to object.
Hey, Marv, thanks for taking a chunk out of your day, man, to join us. And
thank you.
We are appreciative of the work you've done for so many years. And good luck the rest of the way, man. I hope they're all long series so we get more games from you.
Yes. Thank you so much.
That was awesome.
Chuck and Ernie in Steam Room. Come and join us in Steam Room. Chuck and Ernie in Steam Room. Leave your towel on in Steam Room.
Welcome back inside the Steam Room. Hope you enjoyed that time with Marv Albert and the stories he had to tell.
Unbelievable stories, man.
Yeah. And you think about the players whose games he's called and the fights that he's called. And, you know, just, man, that's a body of work.
That's the first time somebody say, Mickey Mantle. Like, wow. we talk about Willie Mays and things like that. You're like, wow, Hank Aaron. I mean, well, you had the pleasure of being around Hank Aaron, but man, just the things he's been around. What a great career.
For sure. We always wrap up the Steam Room old school. We go to Chuck's answering machine, and only one call this week, but it's a good one. That's what I'm told. Let's hear it.
You've reached Charles Barkley. Leave a message, America.
Hi, my name is Mr. Richardson. I'm a fourth grade African-American teacher on Long Island. The reason I'm reading out to your show is because I have incorporated so many parts of your show into my daily teaching, and I just wanted to share with you guys and tell you what I do. Basically, I have like a little talk show on Friday called Inside Room 305. Kids get assigned roles. It rotates the kids every week. And they have to write a little paragraph about something we did during the week. So one kid handled the reading, the math, what we did in a couple specials. And obviously, you know, some kids just aren't into reading. So we've incorporated some segments called First of All, which is if you're up in front of the room, after you do like what we learned, what the read aloud's about this week or what we did in math, you get to do a First of All segment where you get to talk about whatever you want. And these kids, some of them who hate writing, I'm like, yo, I got to do First of All because I want to get up there and talk about Fortnite for like a minute, or 2K, or cheerleading, or, you know, they're playing an instrument. And then one kid is my EJ, because everyone wants to be the EJ. The EJ is the leader of the show who sits in the middle and okay, now you go, like they run it. So that's the leadership spot, and everyone wants to be, can I be EJ this week? Who gets to be the EJ this week? You know, because they know they're in charge. They get to run it. They welcome everyone in the audience. They close out. We have a little segment. It's so much fun. And it's so funny, because I've had them start, talk to each other, don't look at the audience, because I realize, you know, it's easier when they're talking to people and they get louder, and it's so cool. And we included Shaq and the Fool. We added that on the end, and that was where anyone can get up and talk about something that's ever embarrassed them. I always go with one of my history things, and then they can just laugh at their mistakes and learn from their mistakes. I've stolen so much and put it into my classroom over the years. And I said, oh, let me reach out and just let them know that some of the stuff you do has been used in a certain way. Anyway, again, my name is Mr. Richardson. I'm a teacher out on the end of Long Island. I appreciate it. I love the show. I love having that pod to listen to in the morning when I'm driving my kids everywhere. Thank you so much. Have a great day. Bye.
Wow.
Isn't that cool, Chuckster?
That is so cool. You know what's amazing about that, Ernie? I've been a big proponent of the notion that everybody's going to be great at academics. It's a misfortune, the way to look at life. And if you're a teacher, like I give you a perfect example, my brother Daryl, who had all type of issues and drugs and died at a young age, you could try to crank up your car and within 5 minutes, he could tell you like, well, this is not working. I'm like, dude, how you know that? He said, I don't have any idea how I know that. He had no mechanical training, but he loved reading about cars and how they work and everything. So when you got a teacher like this, who's like, my job is to help you, not say, do it this way. That to me, that's a perfect teacher right there.
You know what? Let's talk to the perfect teacher then.
Oh, are you serious?
Yeah. James Richardson is joining us here on the Steam Room.
How are you guys? Thanks for having me on the show. And thanks for this not being a cease and desist operation to shut down what I'm doing in my room. I'm glad we're okay with it.
Hey, we applaud you for this. And it's very cool that you assimilate, you know, these elements of media and that kind of thing into connecting with the kids. And let me say this too, that I look forward to talking to you because my oldest daughter, Maggie, is also a teacher. She's a special needs teacher here down here in Georgia at Buford High School. My two older sisters were both teachers, so I have nothing but respect and affection for you who have pursued the teaching profession. So thanks for being with us, and well done, man. This is a very cool way to teach.
You know, I'm always looking ways to make it fun because, you know, kids, I teach fourth graders, so they're 9 turning 10. It's a nice age group for me because, you know, I have a sense of humor. They can get sarcasm, but they're still scared of their parents, no puberty yet. It's like a nice little window area you can operate on. And then, you know, I can make it fun. I can do different things to keep them engaged because, you know, they have the attention span of like a tumbleweed. So they're gone quick. So I know I'm putting on a show. And then I've stolen stuff over the years, or borrowed, again, no lawsuit, stolen, borrowed, from various forms of media. I'll see things. I'm like, oh, I can take that. Oh, I can tweet this up. And then your show, just as segments, I'm thinking if I can get kids to write about something they're interested in, and they get up there, like the first of all segment, they will go off about everything. And it was funny because we started for a while and some of them wanted to be crystal clear. If I talk about my mom and dad and about how they don't let me do stuff, are you going to tell them? I'm like, I'm not going to say nothing. It's like Vegas in here. Shut down. Don't worry about it. You say what you want. So they'll get up there. My dad won't let me do my mom. It's cute. But they write it out and then we chat it and everything. I added a Kenny's Pictures thing where like someone's segment had to be about stuff we learned during the week. So they'll put something up that we did and they have to talk about the picture in a ditch because they'll be on the smart board behind them. I also do an EJ stat of the day, which is basically as we research nonfiction books, they have to research interesting facts that no one knows. Most of them pull things about animals or whatever. And they have just a bunch of facts that all the kids hear and go, oh my, that's cool. We didn't know that, you know, this kind of thing. So it's like a lot I've incorporated over the years and stolen it. It's great. They really love it.
Well, number one, I'm proud of the fact that we need more Black male teachers. So number one, congratulations on your career choice. That's something that we've been talking about for years. So number one, I'm proud of you. Who influenced you to be a teacher?
I remember coming, I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up basically. I'm out of high school. I'm thinking about it, I'm not really sure. I was back and forth with a few things. I wanted to be a comedian one time because I thought I was funny. And I was like, oh, I could do this. But then my girlfriend, who now is my wife, suggested, you know, you like working with kids because the kids in the neighborhood, I always talk to them and play with them. And I got along with them and I'd help them with things. She said, oh, you should be a teacher. And even then I'm like, I don't know. Went to college, everything. I'm doing the thing. And I'm still unsure. I went upstate New York because I'm in New York. In college, you get opportunity to go into a local school and like practice, you know, get in front of the room. And it just hit the second I got in front of them. I was like, oh, this is it. Because I knew, like I said, the sarcasm, the jokes, I'm putting on a show and I can make it fun and engaging. So then I just turned into Mr. Richardson, which is like not even me. It's like me turned up to 6, like 10. Like I get wild but it keeps them engaged and it's just fun. And I enjoyed it. So like I said, 21 years I've been doing it. I love it. I really do.
Well, I want to tell you, and I said before I knew you were coming on, nice surprise. You to me is what makes teachers special because your job is to find a way to relate to your kids. You know, I had 3 teachers, Ms. Hills, Ms. Turk, and Ms. Robinson, who had a huge effect on my life. But thank you for incorporating our show into your teaching element because you said a little bit earlier, hey, me just telling them something to do, that's not going to motivate them or inspire them. And the way you changed did some tweaks to your curriculum, a lot of your kids, man, owe you a lot of success down the line.
Thank you. That's nice to say. Thank you for saying that. You know, I just try to, like I said, I just try to make it fun and engaging, have a good time with the students and just, you know, do the best I can. It's hard. It's a tough job. And like you said, it takes making the connection. I tell new teachers I talk to, it takes as little as noticing what they're wearing. It's like, oh, that's a nice Ninja Turtle shirt. Oh, I like that. And they're hooked. He can't, you know, he's interested in what I like. Even though, and it, you know, when I had my own kids who were younger, my youngest is 10 now, is actually the same age as the kids in my room. But before I even had kids, I would just turn on like Nickelodeon, Disney, and just try to see what's popping. Like, what are they into now to come out, tweak that into what I'm doing? So, you know, it keeps their attention.
When you first introduced this, James, to a bunch of fourth graders, are they saying like, look, I don't watch the NBA or I don't know what you're talking about? Or how did you show them that this is the direction you're going?
I started doing this 4 or 5 years ago, different version. I've added recent things as you guys have added new stuff for me to take. But I used to write plays and have the kids perform it. I do role plays, kids act things out. So we do enough things where they're up out of their seat doing interactive things where this is just kind of the norm for Mr. Richardson's room. So then it was just a simple matter of like, okay, let's do like a talk show. Because sometimes I do a talk show called The Morning Show with Mr. Richardson, which is just me in front of the room. I'm teaching a subject, but I pretend it's like a talk show. A kid announces me, I come around the corner, they get to say my first name, like, it's Jimmy Richardson. Blah, blah, blah. And then a kid gets to be my guest on the show, and the topic is double digit multiplication, whatever. Kid sits down, and I usually pick a kid who can just, some of them get better at it, but early on, it's the kids who can kind of ad lib. So I don't have to say, you say this, and I'll say this, and whatever. The point is, I do so much of that. Like the Boston Tea Party we did 2 weeks ago, we snuck through the building and completely trashed the room. Like we threw things around the room, made it look like we were sneaking on the boats. The point is, we've done so much wild things that this isn't that hard of a, yeah, all right, this is what he's doing now. I mean, this tracks, you know, and then we just kind of jump up into it. So, and then explaining different segments, usually I kind of go over it with him. I'll model it. I'll get in front of the room and I'll vent about stuff that I don't like, which will make them laugh because I think of something current about the building that I don't like. Why can't we have this? We should have, you know, more recess and stuff. They get all excited. Model the pictures, model the things with an embarrassing moment. Like you show it. And then this is something I personally can't start until later in the year, because early in the year, they're way too shy for this kind of thing. But by the end of the year, midway, December, January, they're so used to getting up doing this kind of weird stuff. It just fits.
Awesome. Hey, well done.
Thank you for the support.
Yeah, we appreciate the message which sparked this conversation and which gives us an opportunity to give a salute to you and all the educators out there who are showing up every day and stretching your brain to say, okay, how am I going to reach out? So well done, man. We appreciate you spending some time in the steam room.
Thank you guys for having me. I got to see Marv. This is like I'm New York. This is just wow.
No, thank you, brother. Thank you. Keep doing your thing.
I love it. Thank you so much for having me.
Chuckster, wasn't that a great surprise guest right there?
It was a fantastic surprise guest. And I just want to say, number one, I love him being a fan of the show and for the support. But also, man, you teachers, man, I can't imagine what y'all have been through this year trying to make this in-person, virtual, who got computer access. Shout out to all the teachers out there, man. I know it's been a crazy year, but I think guys like that, that's what a teacher is right there.
Yeah. I just applaud the creativity and the, you know, just always thinking about how can I make this better? How can I connect even yes. better? And what's yes. going to resonate with these kids? That's
what a teacher is.
That's a gift right there. That's for sure. And for us, the steam room is always the gift that keeps on.
Oh, Ernie, can I say one more
loyal
thing?
Steamers. No, you can't. You're not a guest.
No, I want to say
you're done. You're done talking. We have Ernie, no more time.
Chuckster. No.
Chuckster, I'm messing with you.
No, I know. Ernie, I just want to tell you, man, I've been with you for 20 years. I want to congratulate you on winning the Emmy. Well deserved, man. Thank you for all your hard work. I mean, when I'm working with them other two dummies who already been late already. We appreciate you being our teacher every night.
No, shoot. I appreciate that, Chuckster. And you know that, you know, then the show won two Emmys on.
That was my first of all again. Man, I just want to thank every single person who works on our show to make it a success. I mean, so I just want to say thank you to every single person who's cut a piece of tape, who's a cameraman, a director, a producer, the runners, everybody. So just thank y'all.
Yeah, it's a great point of pride for all of us. Anytime the show gets recognized, and so for anybody who works on it in any role, come forward. Everybody's on the same level of the podium, man. It's like yes. we're all a team, and nobody's job is more important than anybody else's. And we certainly enjoy the recognition from our peers. And so that's very cool. All right, that's it for this time. We got a few days off from our playoff coverage too, so a little free time for you, Chuckster. And I hope you enjoy it and use it to the best possible way.
Fairways and greens, baby. Fairways and greens.
And from what I hear, that's all you've been about lately. All right, y'all. Thanks for listening to the Steam Room. It has been our pleasure. And spread the word. We need as many loyal steamers as we can. And we hope that this has maybe just been a little bright spot in your day. Maybe. You know, that might be a stretch, but maybe you enjoyed it. So thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Right, Chuck?
Yes, sir.
Later.